live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University. It is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right. It's about that time. It is May 6th, 2019. It's an absolutely beautiful day here in mid-Michigan. Finally, right? Finally. It was a pretty awesome weekend, too. I mean, temperatures in the mid to, you know, mid-60s and early 70s, right? I mean, just awesome, especially yesterday. Yesterday in the 70s, you know, not a cloud in the sky, sun beaming down. It was the perfect spring day, wasn't it? All weekend, though, really beautiful. Really hope you guys had a fantastic weekend. I know I certainly did, you know, spent some time, especially on Sunday. Sunday was fantastic because I spent some time, I spent most of my day actually downtown Lansing at Cooley Law School Stadium, covering a Cinco de Mayo celebration that just wasn't centered on the Lansing Lugnuts, who changed their name, actually, from the Lansing Lugnuts to the Lansing Locos in honor of Cinco de Mayo weekend and celebrating Latino heritage and diversion here in mid-Michigan. But not just, you know, my story. I have a story coming actually on Wednesday that, you know, isn't really focused solely on the Lansing Locos, but centered on the oldest living member of the Latino community here in mid-Michigan, Mrs. Ava Salinas, who turned 100 years old. I got a chance to attend a really cool celebration at the Chevy Terrace yesterday afternoon into the evening as she was celebrated. So many people came out. They had a live band at the Chevy Terrace. And also there were like two live bands. There was one in front of Cooley Law School Stadium, you know, available for the public to just kind of show up and, you know, celebrate Cinco de Mayo. And then there was one in the Chevy Terrace that was present for the celebration of Mrs. Salinas. And I was there. I got a chance to interview her brother, Alonzo. I talked with the organizer of the event, Tracy Ruiz, who was so helpful in helping me with my coverage of that moment. And also, of course, I interviewed Ava Salinas herself, who is so sharp. I hope to goodness that when I reach, you know, old age, I can continue on living until I hit triple digits as well. I mean, 100 years old. But if I get there, I want to be in the health that Ava Salinas is, because she is still so sharp. She may be 100 years old, but she is so sharp. She handled our interview like a pro. It was truly amazing to meet her and get a chance to interview her. I'm excited about this story coming your way on Wednesday. So that's how I spent most of my Sunday. Then, of course, I watched Thrones last night, Game of Thrones. It's pretty sad that it's coming to an end. We have just, what, two episodes left. So, yeah, and it continues to get realer and realer as the weeks go by. So, great weekend for me. Hopefully you guys had a good one out there. I see a few of you commenting out there that you attended Todd, formerly known as TJ Duckett's Battlefield Brawl, which seems to get bigger and better every single year. I understand that this year they held the flag football tournament at Lansing Sexton High School, which is a change of pace from Marshall Field, which the event has been held
at in the past. I'm told it was a great event, and again, a great day to play some flag football on Sunday as well. So hopefully you had a great weekend. We got a lot to recap on today's current sports because I want to talk about an event that took place on Saturday. It's really one of the very few times that we turn our attention to the sport of horse racing as a nation. Of course, the Kentucky Derby took place on Saturday evening, and this was a derby that was unlike any other. It really was. We've never seen a finish quite like this, and a lot of mixed emotions when discussing this topic for a lot of people out there. I'll explain why. All right. Also, LeBron James on his barbershop show on HBO, he details how he found out about Magic Johnson, former Spartan great, NBA legend, now former president of basketball operations for the Los Angeles Lakers. He detailed on his HBO barbershop show how he found out about Magic Johnson stepping down as president of basketball operations. And I got a few points I want to make about that. All right. Then on the back end of the show, we will invite a current sports alum, Jason Ruff, director of broadcasting and media relations, play-by-play man for the Odessa Jackalopes in the world of hockey. He's going to be calling in around 1:40-ish. You don't want to miss that. And, of course, we will have weekend winners to take you on home. And before I proceed with our headliners, I do want to go behind the glass just for a moment. Connor Mathis, engineer of the Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Connor, how did graduation go, man? It had to be pretty exciting on Friday night, right?
Yep, it was pretty cool. We actually got through it rather quickly. I was kind of surprised. They said typically it's like 2 hours. I think we were out. The ceremony itself was probably done around like 9:15, 9:18, and then it was just finding everybody.
Gotcha. But it was fun. It started at 7:30, right?
Yeah, it started at 7:30.
7:30 to a little after 9.
Yeah.
So how was it crossing the stage?
It was pretty cool.
Who I'm curious. Who announced your name? Was it Scott?
It was Scott. Johnny? It was Scott. So I was saying to someone who was sitting next to me. Like, I mean, man, I work with Scott. So if he misses my name, we're gonna have problems when I get back to WKR.
He didn't mess it up, did he?
No, he hit it perfectly.
Okay, good.
Middle name and all.
I'm telling you, he's a vet, man. He's been doing it for a long, long time. So our very own Scott Pohl, Jody Knoll, and also Jamie Paisley, they were, as they do every single year, they were the individuals rocking the mic and announcing names throughout the weekend for graduation. So, again, congratulations, Connor, and congratulations to every Spartan who can now call themselves alum of this great university. All right, you know what's next? Here are your quick hit headliners. All right, we start here. Michigan football fourth-year junior quarterback Brandon Peters. He has entered his name into the transfer portal. Peters' move into the portal, first reported by SEC Network's Cole Kublik. He confirmed via a source by the Detroit Free Press this news becoming official on Saturday. Peters was a participant with the Wolverines during all of spring practice and is currently with the team on an overseas trip to South Africa. He plans to graduate from U of M this spring, which would make him eligible for a grad transfer. Now, once Peters finishes his undergrad degree, he'll have 2 years of eligibility remaining beginning this year in 2019. All right, and as I mentioned, you know, congratulations to all of the Spartan graduates this weekend. Nearly 100 Spartan student athletes took part in spring commencement ceremonies on MSU's campus this past weekend. MSU Athletic Director Bill Beekman, quote, "I like to congratulate all of our 2018-19 grads. Our student athletes are amazing people who accomplish great things. Their achievements, both as athletes and in the classroom, make everyone throughout the athletic community extremely proud. For some, graduation means that they are leaving our campus, but it also ensures that they are Spartans for life. And pretty cool to see Cassius Winston, Matt McQuaid, and also Kyle Arnes on social media. I saw them, those three on social media, crossing the stage, and also a pretty cool picture with those three and Michigan State men's basketball head coach Tom Izzo on Instagram. So awesome stuff. Congratulations to all of the student athletes who crossed that stage this past weekend as well. All right, as I speak, the Michigan State women's golf team and the Greater Lansing Sports Authority is hosting the 2019 NCAA Division I Women's Golf Championship at Forest Acres West. Now, this event will run until Wednesday. The 18 teams and 6 individuals will compete for 54 holes over 3 days as the top 6 teams and top 3 individuals not from those qualifying will advance to the national championships to be played May 17th to the 22nd at Blessings Golf Club out in Arkansas. So hopefully the women can have a great finish to this regional, again, being hosted in their backyard at Forest Acres West. I'll also have an update as to where the Spartans sit at some point throughout this hour, okay? Okay, Michigan State baseball ended its, softball, I should say, ended its season with a dramatic 10-9 victory in 8 innings at Rutgers on Saturday afternoon. Katie Ladd led off the 8th inning with a solo homer to left field, her 2nd of the game. That would stand up as the game winner as Allie Walker allowed a double in the bottom of the 8th but got a pair of routine ground balls to end the game with the tying run on 3rd. In the world of art and baseball, Bailey Peterson propelled Michigan State to a 7-4 victory at Purdue on Sunday afternoon at Purdue's Alexander Field as the Spartans clinched their first road series win of the season. Junior designated hitter Peterson had missed several games recently with an injury, but had a smashing return to the lineup on Sunday, going 3-for-4, 2 ribbies, and a run scored, as well as drawing a walk. The Spartans rallied, actually, from an early 1-0 deficit, plating 2 runs in the 3rd for a 2-1 lead, and then never trailed. So, Michigan State, good outing this weekend when it comes to Michigan State baseball. Again, that 7-4 victory at Purdue on Sunday. Okay, McGregory Contreras, he slugged his first homer of the year. Sean Winmer, he was spinning a gem, really, in the Lansing Locos at 14-15 now, better known as the Lansing Lugnuts. Absolutely rolling before having to hang on for a 7-5 win over the Beloit Snappers on Sunday night at Cooley Law School Stadium. A little over 5,000 people attended the game, which began with a street festival in celebration of Cinco de Mayo from 2 to 6 p.m. and ended with Lansing capturing the rubber match in the 3-game series, their last in a stretch of 3 straight games playing as the Locos as part of Minor League Baseball's Copa de la Diversión campaign. The Lugnuts will become, became the Locos, and Don Jim Blue and Mary Gold jerseys one final time. They will do that one final time on Sunday, August 18th. So the Locos will come back later on in August. 2 weeks after accepting a role as advisor to the man who replaced him as general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, Ken Holland reportedly is leaving. According to TSN's Ryan Rishog, Holland will be named GM of the Edmonton Oilers. The Free Press reached out to multiple people in the Red Wings organization, but was not immediately able to verify that report. But it's pretty much set in stone. The deal is reportedly worth $5 million per year over the course of 5 years. So that's news that crossed the table over the weekend. My frat brother actually sent me a text letting me know that news, and then I proceeded to, of course, read that article. Quick reaction behind the glass. I know, Jack Kerwin, you probably have some thoughts on your Wings and this news concerning Ken Holland. You like this? You like that Ken Holland is leaving?
Yeah, it's all positive because it just means that Steve Yzerman gets to bring more people in and kind of fill out the front office the way he wants to.
And why wouldn't they be able to do that with Holland if he had stayed?
Well, I mean, it's just because he's already got so many people in place, and you'd have to assume a lot of guys that are currently in the Red Wings front office are going to follow Holland to Edmonton. I would expect more attrition from inside the front office. So as a response, Yzerman will be able to hire some more of his own people.
Was this surprising for you then at all? Or you knew it was coming?
When I heard that he'd signed an extension after Yzerman was named the general manager, I expected Holland to stick around for at least one more year. But all in all, it doesn't surprise me that he took another general manager job. I just didn't expect it to be this quick.
Gotcha. All right, again, Ken Holland leaving the Detroit Red Wings. All right, the Detroit Tigers, despite getting demolished by the Kansas City Royals 15-3 on Saturday, the Tigers still managed to win the weekend series. Journeyman Brandon Dixon, only in the majors due to a series of injuries, hit a three-run homer in the 10th to lift the Tigers over the Royals. Your final 5-2 yesterday, and the Tigers are off today before hosting former manager Brad Ausmus and the LA Angels in a three-game series beginning tomorrow. Daniel Norris is starting the opener against Griffin Caning of the Angels. And a quick update when it concerns the NBA and NHL playoffs. Yesterday, over the weekend, we saw the Houston Rockets beat the Golden State Warriors. That game actually took place on Saturday, 126-121, the final in overtime. Golden State still leads that series 2-1. The Toronto Raptors beat the Philadelphia 76ers 101-96. That series is tied up at 2 games apiece. The Denver Nuggets beat the Portland Trail Blazers 116-112, just 2 days after a 4-overtime game that saw the Trailblazers eventually win 140-137. The series is tied at now 2 games apiece. And in the NHL, the Boston Bruins top the Columbus Blue Jackets 4-3. Boston leads that series 3-2. Also, the San Jose Sharks beat the Colorado Avalanche 2-1. San Jose leads that series also 3-2. And the St. Louis Blues over the Dallas Stars 4-1. That one is going to a Game 7. Series, of course, knotted up at 3 games apiece. And a controversial finish to the Kentucky Derby. At the end of the most exciting 2 minutes in sports, it appeared that Maximum Security had captured the first leg of the Triple Crown. And you know what? That's a great segue right into our first topic. If you saw the finish of the Kentucky Derby and you have thoughts on it, I want you to call in. I want to hear from you. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News. You can comment below the live stream, and you can also tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or you can tweet the show at WKAR News. Here we go.
Roar of Will is second. Long Range Toddy third and four wide and moving up. Is Country House's Pony Express plummets through the field. And here comes Code of Honor. And he bursts through an opening on the inside of Maximum Security. And they're into the stretch. Country House on the outside. Code of Honor down toward the rail. Maximum Security keeps on fighting. Roar of Will is there too as they come to the final furlong. It is Country House on the outside. Maximum Security so dead game. He keeps battling on. Maximum Security. Country House 1-2 down to the line. Second, followed by Code of Honor third, and in behind them, Master Fencer, who was closing late inside of Tacitus. It's Maximum Security. He's never lost a race, and he wins it under Luis Saez.
But it's hard to see that he did anything to Country House.
So here we see him as we're going into the far turn. This is the 3-furlong pole, the green and white pole. There's their passing right now. War of Will, the horse with a white stripe on his face, directly in behind the horse with the pink silks. maximum secured. Now he has a lane to run, so his jockey is taking him outside of Luis Saez in maximum security. Right there is where number 7, maximum security, came out a lane or two, forcing War of Will to steady. It's on a spot of the racetrack where it's very hard to determine exactly how much he impeded him, but you could tell by the reaction of Tyler Gaffleon on War of Will that there was definitely some contact. Yes! They disqualified him.
They did. So for the first time in the history of the Kentucky Derby, the horse that crossed the line first has been disqualified. After the objection, Country House wins the Kentucky Derby with Flavien Prat at 65-1.
Oh, man, how wild was that? The Kentucky Derby finish. We really haven't seen a finish like that in the history of the Kentucky Derby. A scene 145 years really in the making. That occurred on Saturday at the Derby. I got a lot of thoughts on this. Before we do, I do want to... Let's get to a call right now before I dive into what you just heard. Process it for a second. And I'm going to come right back to it. But line one, we do have Kirk from Grand Ledge that is called into WKAR's Current Sports. Kirk, how was your weekend, my man? Thanks for calling.
It was good. Weather was excellent. And I just want to compliment you that the riff from All Along the Watchtower at the end of that was pretty cool.
Well, hey, props to Connor Mathis. We were chatting before the show, and Connor was just cutting that thing up, you know, on his own. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, we're playing some Jimi Hendrix today? I love that. Love that joint. So all that credit goes to Connor for that one.
Well, he gets congratulations for graduating and picking out that riff. That's
exactly.
Pretty awesome.
He's one of my favorites, man. Jimmy, rest in peace to the great one.
Yeah. So here's my question for you, though, and it has to do with graduation.
Mm-hmm.
A few years back, I remember Ray Weathers was the first graduate recipient from former basketball player of the, I think it was the George Webster Scholarship or something. It was for athletes who had come to Michigan State but didn't finish their degree by the time their eligibility ran out. And Ray Weathers, there was a lot of pub about Ray Weathers being the first one to come back and get his degree under this scholarship program. And then you've never heard anything else about it. Do you have any ideas or any other athletes that are partaking in this or have graduated recently?
I have no idea. We'll probably have to dig, you know, up some research on that one, Kirk. But you're talking about so student athletes who have left early and are coming, you know, have come back to get their degrees, basically.
Whether they left early or mm-hmm. whether they exhausted their eligibility. Weathers was here for 4 years, but apparently he didn't get enough credits to graduate. My guess is that, you know, after his last basketball game, instead of finishing up, he went and tried out for the G League or whatever it was at that point in time, mm-hmm. kind of stuff. So any athletes who, you know, say a player who plays for 4 years in football and
right.
then doesn't finish up their last semester, they were able to get this scholarship to come back and finish up and get their degree.
Interesting. Well, I don't know if, you know, we'll have to look that up. Maybe you can get on that, Connor, and see what athletes have used that method to come back and get their degree. But I do know a lot of athletes who have, as you know, Kirk, you've seen this in the news many times, athletes who left college early, didn't right. finish their degree, and have come back to get a degree. I know Michael Jordan. I remember when he left and was drafted by the Bulls in 1984. He went back to UNC to finish up his bachelor's degree, and I believe it was geography. Also, Shaquille O'Neal, you know, when he left Louisiana State to play in the NBA, you know, 8 years later, he came back and got his bachelor's from LSU. Also, Troy Polamalu is another one that comes to mind. Vince Carter is another athlete that I can think of. Even, you know, Venus Williams, Michelle Kwan, you know, there's a lot of athletes who have come back, you know, after going pro and gotten their degrees. So, and Connor, you have a question for Kurt. What is that called? Go ahead, ask that.
What's the scholarship called again?
What's that scholarship called again?
I thought it was named after George Webster.
George Webster, okay. Gotcha. We can look that up. We'll Google that and get back to you, Kirk. But there's been many athletes who have gone early and come back, but I'm not sure if they enacted that particular scholarship.
Well, this was to try and fill the need of players who had left, whether they left early or they just didn't finish up, you know, their graduation requirements, to where they would have the financial motivation to be able to come back to be able to get this scholarship to help pay for them finishing up their degree.
Right.
And I remember distinctly Ray Weathers was the first one to get the scholarship and then graduate, and there was all kinds of publicity about it, and then I haven't heard a peep since.
Well, Connor and Jack, doing some quick Googling, they have brought it up. Jack, you want to update us on Kirk's question?
Yeah, so it looks like, yeah, it's still around. It looks like it's open to student athletes from all sports who are within 30 credits of degree completion at the end of their eligibility.
There you go. Any list of athletes who have used it at all, maybe? But so it is still intact, though, Kirk.
Yeah, I can check on that.
Yeah, we'll check on that and give you an update on that later on the hour. So I get, yeah, it's still intact, and I guess athletes have been using that George Webster scholarship to come back and get their degrees, Kirk.
It just seems like that's the kind of thing you should use for all kinds of good publicity.
That's awesome stuff. I'm glad you brought that up. Thank you so much, Kirk.
All right, take care, Al. Bye.
You got it, man. All right. Okay. I want to dive now into the Kentucky Derby before we hit this this first break, because this was a finish that was a bit odd and certainly controversial, because as we all know, I mean, it's not like, you know, horse racing is a mainstream sport here in America. We only watch during the Triple Crown, starting with, of course, the biggest race throughout the entire calendar, that being the Kentucky Derby. And we saw a finish that was unlike any other finish. Again, in the 145 years of the Derby, we haven't seen anything quite like this. Now, Maximum Security, he went off as the favorite at 4-1 odds. He finished first, seemingly won the Derby, but was then disqualified for moving out of his lane, vaulting Country House into the top spot. Now, I must admit, I did not see this live, Connor, but when I was out and about, I got the notification on my phone that Maximum Security from Bleacher Report. Bleacher Report put it out that Maximum Security had won the Kentucky Derby. And another favorite winning the Kentucky Derby. And I had a conversation actually earlier on that day with my brother Will. When he was, you know, we were kind of going back and forth in our group message, and we were talking about betting and odds. And I'm like, yeah, you know, it's kind of risky throwing out money for the Kentucky Derby, even though so many people do it, which is why this story also has been elevated. Anytime you talk about sports betting and money changing hands due to a controversial call, you better believe it is going to get a ton of press. But I was telling Will, yeah, you know, when it comes to the Kentucky Derby, usually the favorite is going to pull out the win. You don't see a horse, you know, with crazy odds usually win. You know, Country House actually was listed as a 65-1 horse to win the Kentucky Derby. And this marks the first time in Derby history that the horse who finished first did not officially win the race. So surprising. So when I first got this notification, I'm sitting there reading it like, oh, well, you know, no surprise there. You know, Maximum Security wins 4-1 odds, no brainer there. And I did not find out that this review took place and Maximum Security ended up getting disqualified, leading to Country House winning the race. I didn't find out until 1 a.m. on Sunday morning after I was watching the Jacobs and Canelo fight. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, hold on, I just saw this from Bleacher Report. And Bleacher Report, I didn't see it on my phone, Connor, but they didn't, like, give an update saying, oh, well, they may have. I just didn't get that notification on
my
phone.
See any update.
I didn't see any update either.
We had the TV on because I was down in Monroe with my family, and we had the TV on, and they started reviewing it. And then we sat and ate dinner, and about halfway through dinner, it came on the TV saying that maximum security was disqualified. But I didn't get any notification after the fact.
Right. I'm sitting there saying, weird. Are you kidding me? I mean, I could not believe, you know, what I was reading. And then, of course, I had to go on YouTube and I watched the race in its entirety. And, you know, here's the final trifecta after the disqualification. You had Country House winning the whole thing, again, at 65-1 odds. Then at number two, you had Code of Honor at 13-1 odds. And then Tacitus. I still can't figure out how to. You know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
No. I tried this weekend. I really did, and I still couldn't get it.
I still can't figure out.
I even heard him say the name like four times, and I still can't.
If I had to guess, kind of, I think it's Tacitus. I don't know. Who knows? But he was listed as 5-1 odds to win the whole race. So that's what your final trifecta looked like. And you know, here's the official list of the biggest long shots to win the Kentucky Derby in the 145-year history of the Stuart race. In 1913, you had Donerail win at odds of 91-1. In 2009, you had Mind That Bird to win at odds of 50-1. Also at 50-1 odds, you had in 2005, Giacomo win. And in 1940, Galahadian at 35-1 odds, and now you have Country House winning at 65-1 odds. The biggest underdog to win since 1913. That is absolutely incredible. So I was totally flabbergasted at this. And for those who don't know how you know the verbiage in horse racing betting, just to give you guys a quick crash course, you know, because when you look at a bet slip for horses and you see it come up during the broadcast, you saw it come up during the broadcast on NBC this Saturday, you know, you'll see win, place, and show. Now, win, that's the simplest of them all. You pick one horse. If it wins, you get paid money against its odds. Place, you are betting on a horse. This is what place means. You're betting on a horse to win or to finish in second place, but it means the money you win will be lessened because you have more of a chance to win. And show means a bet that one horse will finish in the top three, and like place, your payout is even lower because you have a trio of chances to win. And then you start to get into this terminology, exacta, quinella, trifecta, and superfecta. Exacta means you have to pick two horses to finish first and second in the exact order, so hence the term exacta. Quinella means this bet also requires you to pick two horses to finish one and two, but you don't need them to finish in that exact order. Trifecta means, just like exacta, but with three horses in the exact order to finish. And then superfecta, and this is just crazy, right? If you're really, really lucky if you get a superfecta, because this is picking four horses in the exact order of finish. It sounds virtually impossible, right? It's partially because it's pretty much impossible. You know, and the if you just put down like $2, the amount of money you could win if you nail a superfecta is crazy. Well, check this. There is a man who nailed the superfecta. The shocking disqualification in the Kentucky Derby on Saturday left one man, check this, Connor, $78,000 richer after a measly $8 bet. According to a Las Vegas sportsbook manager, he called it nothing short of a, quote, miracle. Now, the gambler, unidentified, I guess he's a regular at the Mirage. He watched the big race with his mom. He had two identical $4 superfectus that paid $51,400 each, or $39,000 minus taxes, after the 65-1 long shot in Country House was moved up to first place when Maximum Security was disqualified for that interference some 22 minutes after crossing the finish line. But he puts an $8 superfecta bet down, two identical superfecta bets, that paid a little over $51,000 each. Again, doing the math after taxes, about $40,000. That is unreal. How incredibly lucky do you have to be in order for that to nail, right? It's a lucky brother. And also, I saw another bet that, another brother that got lucky over the weekend. Oh, boy, I thought I had the article up. But there was another guy who got pretty lucky and cashed in due to Country House winning the Kentucky Derby. But, you know, if you are the Derby, just one final point here. If you are the Derby, I mean, this is basically like your worst nightmare, right, Connor? I mean, you're already a niche sport as it is. Yeah. You don't get many eyeballs on the regular as it is. And then you have controversy like this that goes down. And in all honesty here, looking back at the race, and you're dealing with horses here, you're dealing with animals, they can be so unpredictable. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact, and this is the point that the breeders of Maximum Security made. I mean, look, 20 horses, that's a large, large field compared to an average horse race. So eventually you're going to deal with, you know, some crowded moments during that race that can lead to some controversy. So it's like the Kentucky Derby was begging for this. They got a bit greedy. That's the point that, you know, those, you know, in the corner of Maximum Security were making. More horses means more money, right? But at the end of the day, it can lead to something like this.
And plus, you're dealing with animals too. So horses, if there's another horse goes in front of it, it's not going to keep running. It's going to pull up. So you never know with that. And then another wrinkle to this, it could be get worse for the Derby, is now the owner of Maximum Security is appealing the disqualification today. So if that gets appealed, then you have to reverse all that, and then all the sports bettors get pissed off because then all their money is either gone or they'd say, hey, can we get that back, please?
Right. Like, how do you deal with that? If you're a sports book, I mean, what do you do?
Well, the owner said, hey, if they don't overturn this, I'll take it to court and I'll argue it to the end. I'm like, I mean, if you're owning purebred racing horses, I mean, you have money to burn. So
right.
It could be real, real bad for the sport in general if it keeps on going through the various labors.
Very true. I don't know how sports books are going to deal with that. And, you know, the fact that, you know, the owners, Gary and Mary West are the owners of Maximum Security, the fact that they are willing to take this all the way, this means that, as you just touched on, Connor, one of two things are likely to happen in Baltimore on May 18th. Now, they've already said that Maximum Security, they're so ticked off that they have already said that Maximum Security will not be racing in the Preakness. That's it. He's not going to be racing in the Preakness. So one of two things could happen on May 18th. Either Country House will win in the Preakness and head to Belmont, really carrying the asterisk. There will be an asterisk next to Country House if he does win the Preakness because of what happened in the Kentucky Derby this past weekend. And, you know, looking, if this thing does go to federal court, which may overturn the result of a horse race that was already overturned by that controversial decision that took place, things could get very, very sticky. So I don't know how sports books deal with this. And again, if you're horse racing right now, I mean, to have this controversy happen when the world is watching, this is your biggest race, this just isn't a good look. And I think at the end of the day, it was the right call because, you know, into that race, going back and watching the video, yes, we did see, and if you're saying otherwise, you're kidding yourself, we did see Maximum Security get out of his lane. He did impede at least two other horses, and then you have that decision. So I asked this question. With that disqualification happening, should they have just ran the race again?
Honestly, I had thought about that. Like, maybe you give it like I don't know how the rest of their schedule affects. Obviously, that plays a role in it. But
right.
Give the horses some time to recover and then run it back.
Yeah, run it
I
back,
mean,
right?
I feel like that you'd have a lot less headache in the long run.
And ratings would be through the roof.
Oh,
that'd
yeah,
be
of
great
course.
For
yeah,
Kentucky
no,
Derby.
Watch it again. And it's not like the sports books. Well, the only problem is that the sports books will obviously amend odds. But if you put your bet in on Tuesday of the week before, it doesn't matter to you. And you could get new bettors with revised odds. So
exactly.
it's a real win. But that was the name of my horse. But he did not do well at all.
He didn't. Win didn't do well.
He did not well.
Love the
well.
Name, but yeah.
Great name, but you know the other thing too is if this appeal goes through and the country what is it, Country House? Okay,
right.
So if they haven't even decided if he's racing in the next one.
Well, I imagine a Country House will.
They're undecided though. They're not
really?
Sure.
Really, I don't understand why you
wouldn't. I saw that earlier today. But you know, if he does race in the next one, say he wins that, and then they go back and overturn, that's a lot of money out of pocket for the breeder, for the owner, all that other stuff, because the value of the horse drops then because he didn't win the Kentucky Derby, he only won Preakness, or if he wins Preakness and Belmont,
right?
You know,
right.
It really affects a lot of things going forward. So it'll be interesting
to
see.
I would like to know just how much money changed hands during those moments of the final call of the race and then the reversal due to maximum security, you know, him bumping a few horses. I'm just wondering, I would like to see how much money changed hands. I would love if some publication out there was able to put together that kind of research, because I can just imagine that it was just off the charts.
And then everyone who ripped up their ticket too.
Right, exactly.
And the amount of people through trash.
Yeah, but I think that would be cool. I mean, if we saw a rematch, put them all out there, the same 20, throw them out there and just do a redo, just how crazy the ratings would be. I think the amount of money that was bet in the first place on the Derby would may even skyrocket. I think
you'll get new bettors with new odds every
new
single
bettors.
Time.
I think the Kentucky Derby and those who run it are missing a very big opportunity right now. So
the only question for that is, like, you know, obviously the health and the safety of the animals,
because right,
they just did a quarter mile wind sprint, and they would need time. So it wouldn't be like, you obviously wouldn't run it back to back. It'd probably be like a day or two, or maybe even a week. But then I don't know how that affects the rest of their schedule. That's the only reason I think that'd be a big obstacle for rerunning the Kentucky Derby.
I say do what you got to do, man. If you're looking at a huge payday and great ratings, why not?
Yeah, forget your other races. Like,
if you
put a horse in the Kentucky Derby and you have a second chance at winning or placing, forget the rest. Forget my schedule for next week. I'm gonna hedge my bets on my horse. Maybe finishes in the top three.
Right, we can move some things around, basically. So, your thoughts on this controversial finish of the Kentucky Derby? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll be chatting with a current sports alum, my man Jason Ruff of the Odessa Jackalopes. We'll talk some hockey with Ruff. Don't go anywhere.
Magic step down. What was that?
How did you find out?
Yeah, what was that process
like? Through him.
You found out Magic step down through him.
Yeah, you can't lock him in.
Yeah, I found out from Randy.
Between my stretching session, my right hand comes to me and say, Magic just stepped down. And I'm like, man, get the out of my face. You bull. I go check my phone. I look at it. This happened. Personally, for me, I came here to be a part of the Lakers organization, having a conversation with Magic. So it was just weird for him to just be like, I'm out of here. And not even have no, like, hey, Bron, kiss my ass, I'm gone. It wasn't even that.
Yeah, but it was different for me. Like when I was like, that crazy. And I took a minute, and I was like, yo, Kuz, what we doing tonight? Like,
yeah. Oh, boy. I had to just play that for you guys. LeBron James, during his HBO show, The Shop, he was in there with a few other people. I believe Pharrell was also to LeBron's left. And you also had LeBron's teammate, Lonzo Ball. But they were discussing how they found out about Magic Johnson's sudden resignation. LeBron was stunned, and then he tells Lonzo, and Lonzo can't believe it. You know, we can all agree here. The way Magic left was just really jacked up. That's just not how you do things. It was the right move. Magic's heart wasn't in it. You know, he felt like he couldn't be himself. The job was not suited for him. So he needed to go. But the way in which he left, oh, boy. I must admit also, it was pretty epic, though, right? He just said, I'm out of here, deuces. I'm not telling anybody. I have decided to step down. Pretty epic, but the wrong way. Folks, if you're leaving your job, unless you are just really upset with how things went down and maybe it's justified, please give your boss a heads up. Unless it's justified. Unless you've been wronged, hey, I'm all for it, man. Chuck up the deuces and peace out. But if not, and you've got a good relationship with your boss and your coworkers, do it the right way. All right. Don't do what Magic did. Okay, let's get to our guest for today's current sports. You guys know him quite well. We haven't had him on in quite some time, but I'm excited to welcome to the show now Jason Ruff, Director of Broadcasting and Media Relations for the Odessa Jackalopes. He is the play-by-play guy for the Jackalopes in the world of hockey. And Jason, for our listeners out there that may have been like me when you got this gig and announced it here on Current Sports, Jackalope is not real, right, Jason?
No, it's not real, and I'm actually surprised you're making me sound like I'm someone important now.
Oh, stop it, man.
Giving me all these fancy titles and whatnot.
This is what happens when you're in the game for a while now, man. You've been doing this and doing a great job from what I can tell on social media, my man. But just kind of put in perspective what this ride has been like for you, how you've grown as a broadcaster in this role. What has this journey been like for you, man?
It's been a journey of experiences, you know, from going on the bus trips to learning how to interact with the players to dealing with certain situations both on and off the ice. It's really grown, and it's really been a learning experience and really a crash course in how to be a professional broadcaster. College can only prepare you so much. It's different when you are living and breathing this every single day, and you got games every single week, and you got to be ready to prep every single week, and you only have so much time. So, I mean, it's really been a crash course. I'm really thankful for this first year and really looking forward to see what the future brings moving forward.
I'm wondering, you know, when you look back at your days in college, and for those who don't know, Jason was also a part of the Big Ten Network Student U, and he did call games for the Student U broadcast for Michigan State hockey, and ended up getting this job after he graduated with the North American Hockey League, the Odessa Jackalopes, a Tier 2 junior ice hockey team. Looking back, Jason, in what area have you grown the most as a play-by-play broadcaster for the world of hockey?
Yeah, from this year, you mean?
From this year, well, from college on to now, I mean, how have you grown? Okay. In what area have you grown the most?
Really, really, I think it's how descriptive I am in terms of calling the play and also dealing with other people. Because it's easy in college, in BTN, you're dealing with a lot of other people. You're dealing with certain broadcasts. You have production meetings. You have this, you have that. A similar thing here, because I do a simulcast. We broadcast our games on our radio station here, Classic Rock 102, shout out, and also online at HockeyTV.com. So there's a lot of coordination, both in terms of the people who manage the website and the people who manage the radio station here. I'm incredibly fortunate and blessed to have a wonderful relationship with the folks here at with our local radio station. I love going in just talking with them or doing work with them. And I also have a good relationship with our people over in Canada who manages the website and talk to them a lot if we ever have a technical issue. And I'm also really been really fortunate that the fan reception has been phenomenal. I'll tell you a quick story. I was flying back to Chicago just for a weekend. We had a couple days off, and I managed to take Friday off, come back home to Chicago for a few days. I'm on the flight from Odessa to Dallas to get my connecting flight to Chicago. And I'm sitting next to an individual who, like many people here in West Texas, works on the oil rigs, works welding, works on the oil rigs. And we were talking about, oh, so what do you do? He's like, oh, yeah, I work on the oil rig. I welding. He's like, oh, I work for the hockey team. And he says, oh, yeah, I listen to those radio broadcasts all the time, listen to classic rock, and they have the rate, and they bring on the hockey team, and I'm just sitting there, and I listen to it while I do my paperwork and stuff. And I said, really? Because that's me on the radio. It's like, no kidding. No kidding. So, and he expressed like how much he enjoyed the broadcast, how much he loved listening. And I also know for a fact that I'm happy to say that our listenership has grown on Friday and Saturday nights this year as opposed to last year. So it's really like those kind of moments and you know, meeting parents of players who are just so happy, who listen to the broadcast, both here in America and in Europe. Like, we had a couple European players come up and tell me, like, my parents don't understand a word you're saying, but they love listening to the broadcast every single day, every single game in Europe.
That makes it
great.
That makes it really worthwhile, right? When you know that you're having that kind of impact on your listenership, that is awesome stuff. And I want to go back to your, you know, the first answer that you had during that first question. You hinted on dealing with certain, quote, situations. What situations are you referring to, Jason? I'm curious.
Oh, you know, just, you know, if the game's going the wrong way, and how measured can you be? Because you're the hometown broadcaster, but at the same time, you got to keep a certain level of decorum and stuff like that. You know, There were some times during the season where it was incredibly frustrating, and there were some calls that were a little bit iffy and whatnot, and some other stuff that happened. You know, players don't like if you call them out saying, you know, that's not a good thing. Players on the opposing team I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
If you know, that's not how you play the game or whatnot. And so just certain things and just growing on that, learning where you can say where it maybe is a line too far, and really growing more as a broadcaster.
I got to ask this question because I feel like every young broadcaster has a moment or moments when they're first starting off, and I call them nightmare moments, when things just aren't going right, and you look back and say, oh my gosh, did that really happen? Then you look back, you know, maybe an hour or two, or maybe a day or a week, or even maybe a year, and you say, well, that really wasn't that bad. For me, it was when I was at Channel 6 News at WLNS TV 6, and my teleprompter went out during the fifth quarter broadcast on a Friday night, and that was pretty nightmarish for me. Have you had a moment like that, Jason?
Oh my gosh, Al! We've had some issues with our equipment this year, where it would lose connection. We have a very old Tyline machine that works via phone connection, and some of the connections are not very reliable. And sometimes my call back to the radio station will drop in the middle of a broadcast, and I've just got to be frantically trying to get it back. Well, at the same time, still trying to call the game because we still have the internet TV that's still going live. It got so bad one time where my boss just called me up during the second intermission and said, axe the radio broadcast for the entire weekend, just stick with the video TV. And I was just super, super upset and that we had to do that, because you know that you're basically saying we can't give it to our local listeners and our local fans. Those are our heart and soul fan base here.
Right.
And it really just cut me off. And, you know, looking back on it, it wasn't that big of a deal. We figured out the problem. We're going to correct it in the off season. We're going to be upgrading the equipment to make sure this doesn't happen again. But, you know, it's just some of those moments you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it's one of those. I forget who told me this. You're always going to have one of those moments as a broadcaster, whether you do sports, news, whatever. It's going to be like, well, mother always said these days are going to happen. It's one of those days. And I can't for the life of me remember who told me.
I told you that, Jason. You forgot, huh? Yeah. Well,
That's when
the moment of Fred Heumann and I, we were on the air, and that's the moment when my prompter went out.
You're right.
Fred just stares at the camera and says, "You know, my mother told me there would be days
that
like
was
this."
Fred. That's right.
And then the video began. That was video of Derek Nix at the time. So yeah, I told you that story. So
that's right. Right.
Yeah, Mama told us it wasn't always going to be easy.
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man.
As we come up here on the end of the hour, Jason, I do want to get your thoughts on the NHL playoffs. Just you know, broad thoughts, and so you can educate me on the NHL, because, you know, I'm not a big hockey guy. I start to hone in a bit during this time of the year, and it's getting really interesting because I know that one Game 7 matchup is on the way in the second round, and there may be more to come. Your thoughts on what you've seen in the playoffs so far?
Well, that Game 7 is going to be Dallas versus St. Louis, and that has obviously a lot of people here in West Texas they're going to have their eyes glued to that one. You know, it's been kind of crazy with that one. You know, Dallas had a chance to close it out. St. Louis came back and forced 7, so we'll see what happens there. Colorado, San Jose has the lead in that one. It's kind of been going back and forth, San Jose, then Colorado. Will Colorado force Game 7? Perhaps. I could honestly see that. They're back in Denver. I could see that one going Game 7. I think Boston, Columbus is going to be a toss-up, but I think Boston will come out of that one. Honestly, though, the big team that's been the shocker has been Carolina under first-year head coach Rod Brindamore, also Michigan State alum, just to put that out there for you.
Yeah, the Hurricanes are hot right now. We touched on this on Friday's show. They are really rolling, yeah. Right?
They are rolling right now, and frankly, you know, Don Cherry may call me a bandwagon for this, but I don't care. I'm rolling now with Carolina. If either Dallas or Colorado can't get it done, I'm rolling with Carolina. I like them. I don't see really anyone in the West aside maybe San Jose that could take them out in a Stanley Cup final. Carolina has the mojo right now. Rod Brindamore's got them going in the right direction. He's already won one Stanley Cup with the Hurricanes as a player. I would love to see him win another as a head coach.
All right. And also, Jason, before we get you out of here, you do have some hockey news that you college hockey news, excuse me. Of course, you got hockey news.
College hockey news. Some rumblings here. A couple of tweets. First by Joe Maloney of College Hockey News, senior reporter, basically saying, per Big Ten source, the conference recently instructed teams not to schedule non-conference games for the 2021-22 season and beyond, likely to allow the league time to figure out the new conference format with University of Illinois' D1 elevation gaining momentum. And then a few minutes later, U.S. College Hockey tweeted out that the University of Illinois, along with officials from the NHL and the NCAA ice hockey, are holding an event Tuesday, May 14th at the Big Ten headquarters in Rosemont, Illinois. So taking those two tweets together, I would say that at some point this calendar year, could be this month, that there will be an announcement that the University of Illinois will be having a Division I college hockey program, thus bringing the Big Ten Hockey Conference up to a much-needed 8-team conference format.
All right. We'll see if that comes to fruition, man. And Jason, we got to have you back on as well, especially when the Stanley Cup finals get underway. I definitely want to have you on to break down things. But keep up the outstanding work down in Texas, my man. And I'm sure my listeners will be listening, dude.
For sure. I'll give you a call later this afternoon, and we'll catch up on a more personal basis, my friend.
You are the man. Awesome. Thank you so much, Jason. Appreciate it, dude.
Take it easy, Al. Thanks for having me on.
You got it, man. All right, with a minute left, you got a weekend winner from the weekend, Connor? Any weekend winner in the world of sports?
Anyone who bet on Country House. Anyone. It doesn't matter how much you put on them.
Yeah, that's a really good one. I'm going to go with Canelo Alvarez, even though the fight was a snooze on Saturday night. You guys know I'm a boxing fan. When it comes to certain boxers, I'm not sitting there every week watching a boxing match. But Alvarez and Jacobs, I think that this now sets up Canelo won due to a decision on Saturday night. And I think this now sets up another match between Gennady Golovkin and Canelo Alvarez. But great job by Canelo. He looked very solid. One of the best fighters in the game today. Okay, that does it for this Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Get out and about and enjoy this Monday afternoon. We'll see you on Tuesday. Until then, we take a 23-hour break. Be easy, people.